Written and produced by Katie Stone.
We record a show at the Sunspot Solar Studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with help from all of us on the Kids Crew.
Find lots of information about us at childrenshour.org.
We want to thank Icky's creative team, especially our director, Jonathan Dunsky. Thank you, Jonathan.
Our podcast can be found wherever you get your podcast. Or at patreon.com/thechildrenshour.
Or ask your smart speaker to play the Children's Hour podcast.
We post our photos and more on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Find us at TCH Radio.
Our theme music is written by C.K. Bylow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by the Children's Hour Incorporated and the Public Radio Exchange, PRX, and the Pacifica Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Whatever time zone you're in, whatever area of earth you're on, you are listening to Culture in Motion, the twice monthly show on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM on the dial in Portland and KBOO.FM on the internet all over the world. We talk about the intersections between music, culture, art, politics, and activism. And today, my co-host, Ryan Danley. What's up, Ryan?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, bro. You good?
Yeah, I've been doing some back to stand up a little bit, back on the mic. So I'm kind of excited about that for the first time since the whole deal. I've just been doing podcasting and all that. So I actually got behind the mic and actually had some success. So I'm feeling pretty good. I forgot how much I needed that, you know.
Yeah, so. Man. That's medicine, man. The stuff we love, huh?
Oh, for sure. And like actually like seeing human beings. Like I'm just so used to seeing them through the computer. You know what I mean? Like the people I know and the people I love, the people I work with and stuff. And so it was a moment for real. So.
Well, that's dope, man. Today we have a very special guest, a friend, a colleague, and a comrade, a brother by the name of Malcolm Shabazz Hoover of Black Futures Farms. What's up, Malcolm?
What's cracking?
You know, life, man.
Yeah. I'm just here. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. You know, it's good to be in your company, bro. You know, I always love being around you, so.
No doubt. Well, thank you for making time for us today. You are a founder and one of the lead farmers at Black Future Farm.
Co-founder.
Co-founder, that's right. Mirabai is a co-founder as well, correct?
Yep, Mirabai Collins.
Well, now that we've introduced you, why don't you tell our listeners exactly what it is you do?
Peace. Okay, yeah. So I'm the co-founder and co-director of Black Futures Farm. We're a community farm located in Southeast Portland. This is our second season. It's my fourth season farming here in Oregon. I started out with a mudbone grown, just learning from them as family and friends. They brought me under their wing. And then 2 years ago, Mudbone had a grant to do like community work at Mirabai, and I were part of that process. And about 2 years ago, through my workplace and some folks there, we got access to this land over at the Learning Gardens Lab, LGL at 60th and Duke in Southeast Portland. And we started a community farm there. So, and then coronavirus hit and we had to switch up a lot of stuff, but basically, we offer a place for Black people to return back to the land and heal that connection. It's a learning space. We operate a CSA and farmers market. I'm actually at the farmers market. Well, I'm in my truck, but We are participating in the Come Through Farmers Market right now as we speak, May 17th, 10 to 4 p.m., 7 on Southeast Sound. So it's a community learning space. It's a healing garden. This year, we're doing some new stuff. We grew our CSA a little bit up to 35 this year. We're doing a Gullah Geechee garden as kind of like a cultural tribute to the Gullah Geechee people of the Carolinas, Alabama, Mississippi. It's exciting. You know, we're participating in more markets this year, growing really good food, giving away starts. You know, it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful life.
Wow. Okay, so you just filled my brain. You know, you just a basic rundown. For people that don't know, I'm going to ask you two things. For people that don't know what a CSA is, though it's quite popular, what's that? And then explain more about the Gullah Geechee people after that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So let's start with the CSA. CSA is this model that was started by a brother. His name is, So Black Man started, and I'm blanking on his name right now. He was named after Booker T. Washington, but it isn't Booker T. Washington. And he was an amazing cultural pioneer. So he basically came up with the idea for people to pay the farmer or gardener ahead of time for shares of their harvest. And you just you come and you either visit us at the market or we can deliver it. So you'll pay a set price. I think this year our price is going to be $85 for a full share. Twice a month, you'll come and pick up produce at the farm or from the farmer's market, or for a little bit of an extra cost, we can deliver it to you. So we're serving all folks in the Portland Metro. We prioritize Black and Brown families. We do take food stamps and, you know, all that stuff. So SNAP, you know, double up food bucks. So it's a pretty good deal, you know. It's good for us because we get the money up front to grow. It helps us to build community. And it's really my favorite part of farming is giving people the produce from the CSA, community-supported agriculture. And as for Gullah Geechee Gardens, some of the first people here in the Americas to be brought here were Africans from the Senegambia region. So it's the northwest, the most western point, not northwest, western point on the tip of Africa. So if you're making a thumb, you're making a fist, and your thumb is pointed to the left, at the tip of your thumb is where Senegal and the Gambia are. Mm-hmm. So those people came to the Americas, and a little bit from Nigeria, like the Igbo region specifically, those people came to the Americas, and a lot of them cut out when they got here. You know, they were like the maroon colonies of the Carolinas. They just bounced and went to the islands and met with the native people and blended. And some runaway Europeans came as indentures, but mostly African and native people. And so they started the Gullah culture. Gullah is a particular dialect that is kind of like a patois or a mixture of languages, but mostly it's from the Mende Bantu language family. And the Geechee people are very similar people, but those people are mostly found in Mississippi, Alabama, a lot in Florida. So it's a very distinctive culture in the Carolinas. And so as tribute to that culture, I don't know that I am Gullah. I don't think so in my own family, but I'm gonna do some research and find out. We might be, I don't know. But I wanted to build that little garden at our farm as a tribute to that. And also because it's just a really interesting way they lay it out. It's not in rows necessarily. Geechee gardens were often in small alleyways between houses. And the origin of it is because a lot of people who were enslaved or have run away or whatever didn't necessarily have a lot of land to farm. So they had to maximize that space and also didn't have a lot of time to pay attention to it. So try to maximize that space and to use everything to the benefit, plant a lot of herbs, a lot of medicine, and a lot of food, and it was often, you know, packed in a small space, things next to each other. So it was decorative, it was a healing garden, it was a medicine garden, it was all the things you need your outside space to be kind of packed into one, and often found in alleyways, little, you know, backyards. So they planted them as they could, and it just, you know, very decorative, very colorful, a lot of stuff you can just grab and eat. So I'm looking forward to it. Yep. If anybody's interested in being a part of it, let me know. I can be reached here on the internets. and Instagram, Black Futures Farm.
It's such an important thing, agricultural economy and teaching people to farm. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of our listeners are aware, but there's a really great episode of the 1619 Project that talks about like black farming in the South and how basically systemic racism basically eradicated it over time, just the way the financial situations of the of farming work. If most people don't know, to run a farm, you have to get a farm loan every year, and that's how farming works. It just doesn't pay enough to do it, and they've through that and through how that money is given out and how those things basically have eradicated, black farming and black agriculture in general, and it's really. You know, I'm a produce guy for a long time, so it's really awesome to see these projects coming up and being able to get into our communities, you know.
Yeah, I mean, farming, I want to push back a little bit because farming can be lucrative. It depends on your scale and your market. You know, when you are a small farmer, you know, and small being anywhere, you know, from what we have, which is 1.25 acres, all the way up to 80 acres, you know, it depends on what you grow because you're competing against people who have like literally tens of thousands of acres,
right?
So their economy, they could just price you out all the time. But if you grow a thing that is not readily available or has a specific market, like at our farm, we have cardoon, which is a Mediterranean plant. So you're a produce guy, you know what cardoon is, right? But it's super hard to find and it's not fresh. We have a lot. We have so much, I've been using it as weed cover, you know? Right. So like, I could sell this cardoon, you know, like $5 to $15 a bundle, if I wanted to. And it's just not a thing that we're gonna sell. Elderberries, a lot of things that are high ticket items, but black farmers were usually pushed away from those, weren't allowed to get it. As they tried to grow, their land was illegally seized. You know, it wasn't just that we were outcompeted and like the racist system got us. A lot of people, you know, just weren't able to respond because they didn't have the money to be so nimble, or they were denied loans, you know, just up front, like you said, like, you know, black farmers were just out and out denied loans, their loan paper was thrown in the trash can in front of them. But one of the things we're working on is how can we as farmers, and a lot of black farms are working on this, how can we as farmers right size our farms and our kind of like business enterprises? And we're a community farm, so our purpose is not necessarily to make money. Our purpose is to show the community how to grow their own food, right? So we are entering into private partners, public-private partnerships with nonprofits, with like Brew Doctor, to say, hey, this mission is worth supporting. Give us money, give us some kind of technical assistance or whatever. We're gonna re-educate the people on how to grow their own food. So, because if you can grow your own food, you participate in the economy at a higher level. You have a higher amount of disposable income. You know, you can provide income to your family through selling that food. You can give that food away. Like, food is a great equalizer. And if you can't feed the people, you can't lead the people. So people who don't have the ability to spread their message and provide nourishment along with it are not gonna have a durable message.
Wow, man. That's impressive, brother. I really gotta give it up to you because I think there are so many things that you're accomplishing with the work that you do that go from a very kind of basic level of like what we put in our mouths to nourish ourselves and our connection to that and our skill set around that, all the way up to more complex scientific understandings of how to participate in the economy. One of the things that we're doing at KBOO Community Radio, and I want to let the listeners know, this is part of our membership drive right now. So if you could go to kboo.fm and please become a member, you can go, you'll find a donate button there, and you can donate however much suits you and become a member of KBOO. But one of the things we're doing right now is we're making programming that is youth oriented, in honor and respect of our young people. And I want you to talk about today, how does your work impact youth? And what is your vision for integrating younger people into this kind of work, this food sovereignty work?
Yeah, I want to start with that. Thank you, bro. That's such a good question. I'm now considered an elder in the community. You know, I'm in my 50s. And as much as I love this work and it's healing to me, I really started it with the vision of giving it away to some young people, passing it on to some young people to, like, you know, really innovate on this vision of sovereignty and self-sovereignty and being able to control your own destiny through healing and connecting back to the land and serving your people. So what I'm really trying to do, what we're really trying to do at Black Futures, is set it up to be so solid that when young people come into it as leaders, you know, they're going to have such a strong foundation to stand on. You know, it's going to be just a stellar program for them to innovate on and build. So that, I want to start with that. We started with the intention of passing it to the community, to young people in the community. Now, how we hope to impact the community with youth specifically right now is I'm really looking for a few interns to come on to the farm to really learn this, to commit a few hours a week to putting their hands in the soil. And because when you work on the soil, you work on your soul. It is actually incredibly healing. And I say this as somebody who is in recovery for drugs and alcohol. And as much as the meetings I went to and going to rehab and all that stuff, what heals me the most on a daily basis is going and putting my hands in the soil and working on life and helping to steward and bring life forward. And I really think that our young people would benefit from that. You know, I know that they can, because I have young people out to the farm every Sunday. There's kids who come out, and to see the joy in these children's faces from being able to work in the soil and plant a thing or eat from a tree or pull a leaf off of a plant and then eat that leaf, you know, like, that's amazing. It's magical. And most of our young people, even though we almost all of us come from agricultural backgrounds in our ancestry and maybe even our immediate heritage, don't have knowledge of the seed and the soil. And like, we don't know as a people anymore, most of us, how to put something in the ground, water it, nurture it, and watch it come forward to our benefit. We just don't get it. And it's a whole, that's a whole life lesson right there. Just planting a tomato plant and watching it and then like handing people the tomatoes that you grew and being able to tell them, hey, I grew this. I really want to, you know, work with just a few young people to say, hey, look, let me show you what I've been given so I can give it to you so you can share it. You know, there's an infinite lesson in working in the earth. And I really know that our young people, as a former high school teacher, you know, my background is in youth development and community development. So I work with young people over 30 years. My first job was working with young people as in an after school program. And I've pretty much been riffing on that theme ever since. So I love young people and I really want to work closely with them. We have supposedly a couple young people coming from a program with the Workforce Development Authority, I forget the local agency name, here in Southeast Works, to come work with us, start working with us at the farm. It's a paid internship. We have another small stipend for a paid internship for a young person through the farm. So I have a number of opportunities for young people to connect. I have to say to any young people who are interested that I'm a very like old school uncle-ish type curmudgeonly person. And don't let the smooth taste fool you, you know. it's not always hugs and flowers over here. But I really do have a deep love of young people, and I want, you know, young Black people to come to the farm and really get this, because it's yours, you know, it's yours. And Western society and capitalism will try to deny it to you and then sell it back to you. And we really want to give it to you because it's yours and it belongs to you. And you should be able to share it out and learn the ways that we have always made it. You know, we've only ever made it together, and that's the only way we will ever make it. And that's what we're doing at Black Futures Farm, is not just talking about that, not just philosophizing and theorizing it, like we're really putting that into action, you know. And yeah, so you know, come holler.
Hey, that on that note, where can the people come holler? What's the address and how do people find you online if they want to donate or read
more? Yep. So our Instagram is Black Futures Farm PDX, me make sure I'm not lying. I think that's it. We're on Facebook as Black Futures Farm. If you're interested in donating, Venmo and Cash App are both Black Futures Farm. You'll see my name, Malcolm Hoover, under the profile name. And yeah, so that's us. Yeah, it's just Black Futures Farm, not Black Futures Farm PDX. But it's Black Futures Farm PDX on Venmo and Cash App. So Instagram and Facebook is just Black Futures Farm. Cash App, Venmo, Black Futures Farm PDX. Futures with an S. You can also email me at blackfuturesfarm@gmail.com. Yeah, that's it. Man. And oh, we're physically located at 6745 Southeast 60th Avenue between Flavel and Duke. And I'm there pretty much every day. We're open to the public Monday through Saturday. Sunday is Black Sunday, so all Black people are welcome. It's an all Black event.
Okay. So for our listeners who might find themselves going, well, I want to be part of that, but I'm not Black. What's wrong? How come I can't come? What do you have to say to that?
Okay. Thank you for asking. If you're not Black, you can come Monday through Saturday. I'm more than welcome to have you be a part of the community. Black Sunday is for Black people only, because Black people get to have their own stuff.
Oh, man.
You know, because we get to have our own stuff in our own space, and it's important to create Black-only sacred space for Black people. You know, this is the Pacific Northwest. We're not even like 10% of the population. And it's so rare to go to a place where it's just Black people, and that the vibration and the vibe that creates, and the love that we have for each other, that unbridled like Black joy, is something that I'm committed to growing at the farm. Mm. And wherever I am, as a matter of fact, I'm committed to growing and increasing Black joy, and I'm especially committed to that at Black Futures Farm. You know, we're doing a lot of incredible things there. And anybody who's not Black is always welcome Monday through Saturday. I think that's a lot of time to allow non-Black people in a Black people space. So y'all can have one day where you don't have to be there.
When are white people going to get their fair shake at buying produce? All right, come on.
Listen, I know that's a joke.
Yeah, no, it's a joke. It's a
big
joke.
Jokes. They're big jokes.
Yeah, I'm a joker. No, it's as a white guy, I anybody who would have a problem with that needs to maybe be a little self-reflective for a minute. So, yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
I want to encourage people to once again support Black Futures Farms. Get on out there, take a look Monday through Saturday, or on Sunday, and become a member of Cable.fm. You know, it takes money to keep the programming going, to keep the facility running, the resources, the technology to bring to you this kind of information like you're hearing on Culture and Motion. Ryan, you got any more questions before we say goodbye to Malcolm?
No, I just want to say thanks for doing something good and keeping agriculture in the front on the front burner, because it's crucial to this world. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me, fam. I appreciate it, man. Like, actually, yeah, please do go out and support KBOO. KBOO is great information run by normal, ordinary people and extraordinary human beings. You know, it's not run by a bunch of yahoos who don't know the community. And I really appreciate the platform and always sharing our message. And Crenshaw, I love you. You're an excellent human being. Co-host dude, I love you too. You got jokes.
I appreciate that, man. Love you too, man. Thanks. I try.
No, Ryan, you with me. You with me. We the same tribe, man.
Yeah. All right, brother. Have a good day.
Peace and love, man.
Peace. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon to my listeners, to our listeners everywhere. You are again tuned into Culture in Motion, your twice monthly show that talks about the intersection between art, culture, politics, activism, and I'm your host today. My brother, my co-host, Ryan Danley, had to take off and handle something, so we miss him. I want you all to know that he misses being here with us.
But today, I have a very special guest on KBOO Community Radio, and I want to encourage you, become a member of KBOO. Go to kboo.fm. You'll find a place for you to donate, and you can sign up to become a member and pay an amount that's affordable to you to become a member and support great programming like this. I have a very special guest, Amber Boyston. Welcome, Amber. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm happy to have you on the show. And you were filling me in before we went live about the incredible work that you do. Would you describe yourself as a mediator?
Although it's beginning to feel like mediation has been a heavy word for a lot of people, although that has been the bulk of the work that I have done my whole life and I continue to do. And so sometimes I say I just support facilitating conversations.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yes, a mediator. Mm-hmm.
So you said most of your life you've been doing this.
Yes. I'm 37. I started doing mediation work when I was 13. I'm with Clackamas County Family Court Services, and I would work with youth and families who were in conflict. I would sit down with an adult mediator, and I would be there to support the youth, and I would help facilitate conversations around issues that, you know, teens and adults have commonly together. And that was really my orientation into abolition work, is holding space for communities to have tough conversations and to figure out alternative ways of handling really big challenges, whether it be addictions or abuse, with community and with one another and with trained health professionals versus going to the police.
Wow. You just said a big word, abolition. So for some of our listeners that might not be familiar with the term, in the context in which you bring it up, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Most often people think about abolition of the prison industrial complex and similar systems, and that definitely is under the umbrella of abolition. I like to also include that abolition is a focus on energy and resources within every single community. Communities that are already doing work, human work, at a foundational level to support one another. And so when we think about total abolition and what that might mean, often for a lot of people, what comes up is fear. And I like to remind people that it's just reallocating resources to communities that are already doing foundational work to support in educational spaces and medical systems. In day-to-day life, when we think about communities supporting one another with families from birth on, that's often under the umbrella of abolition. So when we're not waiting for a yes or permission from our government, when we're just pushing in with our own knowledge and our wisdom and our education, that's foundational abolition work.
Wow. Okay, so you've been involved with abolition work, but you've also been involved with mediation since you were 13. So you were a youth when you got involved.
Correct.
With this work. What was it in your heart as a 13-year-old and in your mind that drew you towards doing the work?
Mm-hmm. I come from a family of educators. My father's family is Ethiopian and my mother's family is Irish. So I'm a light-skinned Black woman who has been born into a family who, both family sides, who have been educating on the front lines in their own way. And so that was just part of my epigenetics as a whole. Although in my personal family dynamic, there was a lot of conflict. And I've always been somebody who's been interested in finding ways to create pathways to understanding. And when I received a training in middle school, I just felt like this was it. Yes, like I had a tool and I needed more. And so I jumped right on the opportunity to receive more tools from this community. At the time, they were named Clackamas County Family Court Services. And I worked with a lot of lawyers and therapists and counselors who were there to just support me and other youth and gaining wisdom on how to really stay rooted in our own integrity and then also deal with conflicts as they arose.
So you you have your own nonprofit Spirit, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
I want you to, if you would, tell people about what Spirit and Justice is, and for our youth listeners, or for parents that have children, and young people that might be interested in getting involved with this kind of work, especially in light of, at least in our city in Portland, we got listeners all over the world, but there's a lot of conflict right now. There's actually an intense amount of deadly conflict. We're losing a lot of young people on sometimes a day-to-day basis, right? So I would imagine that there are youth in our community who are looking at their peers and who are looking in the mirror and who are going, this has to stop, but what can I do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How would you direct some of those young folks to get involved in this work?
Yeah, I would say that it's really important to start educating yourself and reading authors that are Black, Brown, and Indigenous. It's really, really important to just even Google online different names. You could look up Angela Davis, you could look up James Baldwin. I could keep naming names, but the education is key, and finding pathways to educating ourselves is also foundational. And starting to communicate how you're feeling, I would say that youth have a profound way of talking about what they want and what they need. And so I really, really encourage other adults to lean in and listen. And I say to the youth, us adults are here, like we're interested in what you want. And when you speak, we do want to follow. And banding together with other community that's also like-minded can be really, really helpful in terms of creating a movement. But continuously staying educated as an individual and educating yourself within your community and speaking about what you're passionate about and really screaming about the injustices from the rooftops are things that I think are always going to move the needle forward in terms of creating pathways towards justice. Wow.
And Spirit of Justice is if people want to read about the work you do online or even contact you or even donate, you know, to your cause, where can they find out about that online?
Yes. Yeah. We're spiritofjustice.org. You can email me at amber.spiritofjustice.org. We're on IG and Twitter and Facebook. And really, we're a frontline abolition organization that is both really dedicated to Black liberation. So, supporting and tools and resources for Black, Brown, and Indigenous community and centering themselves and creating space to share whatever they are bringing in terms of their light and their fire to this world. And also, to balance that, Black liberation is really that abolition, justice, and equity work. And so I do a lot of trainings and facilitations both online and in person around how to do anti-racism work, how to live an abolition lifestyle, and really how to create pathways to Indigenous sovereignty and land back.
The fact that we live in a settler colonial state, when I hear you say Indigenous sovereignty and land back, I think about the global pathways that some of us descend from. Myself being descendant of forcibly displaced Africans who were sold, captured and sold and forced to work for their lives, their whole lives. And then I have other ancestors who were descended from them, who worked in a system of capitalism as wage slaves and for generations. You mentioned you come from Irish and Ethiopian heritage. And when I think about today's news, I think about historic conflicts that some of us in the United States have been informed to think about when we think about Ireland. And I think about similar things, as well as current conflicts when I think about Ethiopia. How do you see yourself being a Black woman? You identified yourself as a light-skinned Black woman that does decolonization work. Like, with all those things combined, how do you navigate the identities and the geography and the purpose of your work?
I very much feel like a bridge. I know because of my access, because of the amount of melanin that I have in my skin, because of the way that I've been socialized, because of my family, because of my educational background, I have an opportunity and also a calling and really a duty to speak up about injustices everywhere, whether it's Ethiopian Eritrean conflict amongst presidents, whether it's the colonialization of Ireland, or, you know, what's happening right now, the genocide and apartheid in Palestine that's been happening for decades and for hundreds and hundreds of years, the amount of colonialization and white terror that has ensued on not just your, like you said, your family line, my family line as well, and many others. I see myself very much as straddling the line of someone who, because of my access, because of colorism, and because of where I am in this part of the world, Portland, Oregon, and, you know, was once supposed to be a white utopia, I am both called to continue to speak up as loud as I can, and also find ways to create space and centering my most melanated, richly melanated community, as because of anti-Blackness, their voices are not listened to, and so I'm straddling that line often.
Anti-Blackness is something that the cable listeners might be aware of and informed about. Those of you listening to Culture in Motion that are not members of KBOO, again, I want to invite you to become a member of KBOO. You can go online to kboo.fm. And I'm at home right now. I do not have the number for you to call in front of me, so I apologize for that. I'm not going to tell you, because I don't want to mistakenly send you to the wrong location on your telephone. However, Amber, when you think about the future, you use the term decolonization, and you also use the term Black liberation. These things, you know, the colonization of land masses and the subjugation of populations of people, these are historic processes that took place over centuries. With the ecological crisis and crises that we face as earthlings, are we going to see Black liberation? And if so, what does that look like? And are we going to see decolonization in our lifetimes? And if so, what does that look like?
I mean, obviously, it's very personal to every person. When I think about what Black liberation looks like, it ultimately is liberation for all people. And that starts from within, right? That's a calling to wake up to our humanity, or remembering that we're all connected, and to remember that these belief systems of anti-Blackness are epigenetic. They're living within ourselves. And so we can every single day take active steps to change who we are, both on a cellular level and then also on a practical level in terms of how we live. And I think about the future looking like people really remembering to breathe and you know, you know, I think about practicing it now, really. I mean, to be honest, Mike, like, I'm like, let's practice what we want in the future now. So how do we practice moments of joy? How do we practice moments of stillness? How do we practice moments of stepping back and just witnessing without judgment, you know? Yeah. How do we try to listen with an intention to hear? How do we just keep showing up every day and trying and changing the way that we think about things? How do we start to try to shift the way that our brain scans the world to more positives? So just, you know, sitting with that stillness. And I really, really believe that we are the change. So we just have to start that from within. And I hope we get there. I really, really hope we get there. I hope we start listening to youth. I hope we start listening to Indigenous community. I hope we start listening to our queer, non-binary, LGBTQIAP+ community, harnessing all that Black African ancestral wisdom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What role do you think art can play in these efforts?
I think art is the road.
Are you an artist?
So my background would be theater in terms of art, and so I find it really fun to play. I find it really fun to practice role playing what the world could look like. Yeah, that's my orientation to art. But I think we need music. I think we need images, whatever that medium is for people. I think that art is the way, absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on Culture in Motion, Amber, and I appreciate the work that you do. One more time for our listeners, if people want to reach you, how do they do it?
Yes, I'm Amber Boydston with Spirited Justice. You can find me on all platforms. .org if you want to email or look up my organization. All power to the people. I'm so thankful to be here. Thank you, Mike.
Right on. All power to the people. One love, and we'll talk soon.
Talk soon.
explain what they did to it. Now rap just don't do that same rap, but they take the rawness away. Just didn't make it too pretty.
she hit me like, Dada, saw that thing so beautiful. Dada, she just hit my heart, oh. Dada, full force, and she got me like, Dada, I be like, Dada.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to KVOO Portland. Please join us for the next few hours of special programming for Youth Day. We'll hear from KVOO's very own youth collectives, The Underground and Randomonium. Other programming includes KVOO's Art Talk Bus Stop and a full